Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
People are driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
You're invited to the Writing Excuses Cruise, an annual event for writers who want dedicated time to focus on honing their craft, connecting with their peers, and getting away from the grind of daily life. Join the full cast of Writing Excuses as we sail from Los Angeles aboard the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th through the 27th of 2024, with stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise offers seminars, exercises, and group sessions, an ideal blend of relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 36. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on tension, narrative versus contextual.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Howard.
And I'm obsessed with the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which is narrative and contextual tension. So Just to give a, this is what I mean when I say that. To me, narrative tension is the tension that's actually happening in the story. It is when your characters are tense, when your the setting is tense, anything that's actually happening on the page. Contextual tension is what the reader is bringing to the table. And the example that I always use is if you write a story called Last Dinner in Pompeii, and it's just a normal story of people having dinner, we all know that Pompeii will be buried by ash the next day, so we will bring plenty of tension to the table, even if they're just talking about how next week they're going to go shopping. We're like, oh, you won't. And that brings tension. That's contextual, but not narrative at all. And I think this Ring Shout is a work that obviously lives in a place of contextual tension.
The context that I'm bringing to this is I've been so excited for this episode because I think 3 years ago on the Writing Excuses cruise at like 1 a.m, you explained this idea to me, you know, after a day of hanging out, and my jaw was on the floor because I never thought about it this way. And it's such an important concept and it's so useful. And so getting to finally talk about it on mic for the podcast is a resolution of a kind of tension for me. So
love it.
That's also one of the reasons that some works don't translate, because they bring a lot of contextual tension from their home locations that the audience in the new location doesn't have. It was one of the things that happened to me when I was reading Three Body Problem, that there was a lot of context that I was just missing. With Ring Shout, I had, because I am from the American South, there was a lot of contextual tension for me that was layered onto the book, where I was anticipating things. And I think that P.J. L.A. Clark was using that very intentionally throughout the book.
It's an interesting question, though, which is how much do you want to assume that your audience is bringing that context with them? You know, I also, my family, I have family from the American South, family from slavery, family who've experienced, you know, racism in the South. And so for me, I'm like, oh, this feels very tense on a lot of levels. But if you're from another country or you never heard of the Klan, like, do you think that the story still works, or do you think that there's something that is required in the context in order to make the tension happen?
I remember around the launch of the TV show Lovecraft Country, there was a lot of conversation because the opening scene of that show is a actual historical massacre of Black Americans in the American South. It's referenced also in Ring Shout. It's mentioned. I had never heard of the event. I didn't know about it. I also grew up kind of in the South. And, you know, racial politics is a personal interest of things that I've read about and studied, but I just didn't know this particular event. And so a lot of the press coverage was about what an incredible work it is, both that is bringing in all this contextual elements, but also educating such a broad audience about it, right? And so I think it can do sort of both. And as one of the challenges of leaning on that contextual attention is you need to work with your audience to some extent, but it's also not your responsibility to educate them about it in the moment. But if you sort of give them enough of the context clues to understand what kind of thing we're talking about, and then they can go into doing the research about it on their own.
It's worth pointing out here that the narrative versus contextual dichotomy is enormous, absolutely enormous. I'm sure you've all had that experience where you're talking about a film with somebody and halfway through you're like, it's like we watched two different movies. And it's because, yeah, about 80% of what you get out of a thing has to do with what you brought into the thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are things that I'll watch where the lead actor or one of the actors who's prominently featured is someone I just no longer like because of a Me Too or whatever. And that is a new context that didn't exist when it was created, but it's a real thing. Planning for it is fantastically difficult. And my counsel to writers is don't assume that everybody has the same context that you do, but on your first draft, trust your context and write the story that you want to write. And then you're going to have to work with your beta readers, with your editor, to see if those narrative versus contextual bits are fighting.
Well, one of the things I liked most about this was the confidence with which P. Jelly Clark approaches the historical context.
Yeah.
We're dropped into a situation, we're dropped into a scene. Nothing's explained to us other than the fantastical elements. Those are explained to us. But the political, historical context, we are assumed to either know it or we're picking it up from atmospheric clues around what's being discussed. And I found that to be very powerful and very useful.
And I think that one of the reasons that that works so well is in that opening scene, you are dropped into that sort of primal life versus death tension. You get a group of people who obviously know each other and are, you know, we sympathize with, who are immediately trying to kill some horrific monster. And so it tells you, okay, I understand what the stakes are. I understand who I'm rooting for and who I'm not. Now, as I get more context, I can use that to build out the world. But I think it grabs you so immediately that you're not worried about the context because you're like, oh, if there's a giant monster in front of you, you should probably hack it to death. I totally get that. And now that I'm in, now you can tell me about why it's important and what's going on around it.
One of the things with that particular scene, that was the first scene where I had that layer of that extra layer of tension, because, you know, what I was fully anticipating was going to happen is that they would defeat that monster and then they would have a bunch of angry white people running after them. And that's not what happens in the book. And what happens is worse. And different, maybe not worse, it's different. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I think that P. Jelly Clark is doing it very intentionally, that a lot of what he's doing is setting up, here's the context, here's a thing that can go wrong, but I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to do a different one. And that's, that again is that thing for me when you're playing with, when you're using historical work and you're playing with someone's knowledge of that time, where you can put some additional tension on the story by putting those two things in opposition, by moving in directions you weren't necessarily expecting. But also, if you don't know that that's a possibility, it still plays. Like, you don't need the contextual tension for it to be really terrifying.
In the previous episode, we talked about how this book uses a lot of horror techniques, but it's kind of a, you know, fantasy, action, adventure, historical. That particular tool of setting up, having our characters be aware of what could go wrong and prepare themselves as best they can for this worst case scenario that they're imagining, and then discovering that the worst case scenario is actually 25 degrees to the left and is way worse. That's straight out of the horror playbook. Mm-hmm. And so you are not wrong in feeling like this is a horror novel, because that's done so expertly and so often.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. And one of the reasons this is such a great example of this is the contextual tension remains contextual. It doesn't really be... It never fully finds its way into the narrative, mm-hmm. And into the in-text tension. And he kind of makes that agreement with us in that opening scene,
yeah.
And kind of sticks to that boundary in a way that I think is very savvy, but still leverages the awfulness of the actual history to increase, to add extra weight to a lot of the character journey, to a lot of the character decisions, and to the emotional intensity that we feel throughout.
Yeah. And I will now pause because of the context that we are on a podcast and we need to take a break.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi, I'm Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesac and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Imagine learning from the best without the years of struggle. On my podcast, I sit down with stars like Montel Jordan and Sarah Blakely to share the hard-earned lessons that can save you time and effort on your path to success. Ready to speed up your success story? Listen to Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson wherever you get your podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
I write best when I've got music to isolate me and my personal acoustic space from the rest of the world. Music with no words in it works best for me, and one of my very favorite playlists is Random Friday, the 2007 album from Solar Fields. It's through-composed, each track flowing both thematically and seamlessly into the next, so I never get distracted by a gap telling me I might need to restart the music. Solar Fields really leaned into this because there's an 11th track, which is a 78-minute continuous mix of the first 10 tracks, just in case your player of choice doesn't do gaplessly. But what does it sound like? Well, it's upbeat, ambient, and electronic, and I listened to it while I wrote this.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
And we're back. I want to take this moment to talk a little bit about, in detail, because we love to get into the text in these close readings, and talk about the use of language in this. Because I think that some of that, what do you have from context and what do you have on the page, is really evident in the way that the text uses Gullah. Now, Gullah is a real language, and it's used here occasionally, mostly in the Nana Jean character uses it. And that's the way that she speaks. And if you have the context to be able to understand Gullah, you'll understand what she's saying more readily. But what I love is that she actually, in text, warns very drastically that bad things are coming. Mm-hmm. And so it's an important narrative tension moment, but it still lives within the context of being in Gullah. And if you sort of give up and don't read that part or skim past it, you could theoretically miss that moment of tension. And what I think that Clark does so well here is that it's repeated. So she says bad weather's coming, essentially, and then it comes in at the end of the chapter in italics. So it's like, did you miss all of this because the context held you back? I'm going to bring it back on the page in a narrative way so that there's no way you can miss that bad things are coming. The word bad is there, even if you don't understand mm-hmm. anything else. And I just really love that. So I wanted to throw it out.
It is one of the things that I enjoyed so much about this book and why I wanted to listen to it in audio. Because in audio, you get all of the, because that's not the only language that's showing up in there. There's not the only dialect. And so getting all of that interplay is so much fun. The other thing that it does besides that is that it also brings in the contextual thing about different class perceptions that people have. That frequently when people hear someone, people will think Gullah is a dialect and, as opposed to a language. And they will hear it and think that the person in modern day is like low class, uneducated, whereas Nana Jean is a very powerful woman. And I love the fact that he is using that and he's subverting some of the expectations that we often have from modern day, some of the contextual expectations. He's subverting those in the narrative tension that he's using, I think is so much fun.
Even without the Gullah, the narrator speaks and often omits definite or indefinite articles or conjugations of to be, you know, we up on the tower, or no, we up on a tower rather than we are up on a tower. And it took me 5 or 6 pages to realize, oh, no, this is just the voice of my POV character, and I'm all in. I'm not sure if there was a context that was expected of me or if the narrative taught me that, but it was definitely there, and it was a little while before I stopped noticing it as a linguistic thing in the book.
Well, I think the language does a really good job. I mean, both in the use of Gullah and the use of, you know, Creole and some other dialect things. And then overall, the general use of a particular voice of the narrator. And I think this is such an important thing when it comes to a lot of fiction of communicating who this book is for, right? And it being written for a specific audience while still being accessible to everybody, right? Like, most of us here are not of the culture that this was written in the perspective of. But I got a ton out of it. I had a great time reading it, and I learned a lot reading it and all of that. But, you know, the idea of it is written for an in-community reader that is still accessible from a broader perspective, I think is really powerful.
There's an analogy that I use sometimes when I'm talking about this, which is that you can think of narrative structure, tension, all of this. You can think of it as a picture, and you can put anything you want to in that. And then your audience comes to you with their glass, and you don't know what glass they're coming to you with. So if I am, say, if I've got a fine Pinot Noir and a beautiful crystal, whatever, and I pour it into a Riedel glass, a Riedel wine glass, which is the glass that it's intended for, it's like, ah, this is a perfect match. But if you come to me with red Solo cup, you're still going to enjoy the wine, just maybe not the way I intended it. On the other hand, if that pitcher is filled with hot apple cider and you come to me with wine glass, it's going to shatter. And so one of the things that, you know, when you're talking about this in audience, the writing it for a specific audience, you're writing it knowing some of the context they're going to bring for it, knowing that that's who you want to write it for and that everybody else can enjoy it, but that's not the intended audience.
If I'm pouring whiskey and you're coming to me with a sippy cup, you're coming to me with a sippy cup and a baby bottle. No, stop that right now.
No, that was how my parents actually dealt with colds with me. But anyway,
I was going to say, and also sometimes you got to shatter people's glasses.
Yeah, like
sometimes, you know, that's okay. And I think that one of the things that I love about what publishing I think is doing these days, though probably not as much as it could be, is letting people tell a story where they don't have to have the right context. Because the narrative tension is strong enough in this piece that if you have no idea what's going on, it is still a story of people killing monsters that are horrible and have, you know, mouth eyes and just things that are not going to work for you. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, yeah, I love those mouth eyes. So even if you don't understand what is happening in the context, you'll still get a great read out of it. And I think that what has happened in the past is that sometimes people will see the context and shy away from it. and not see what's going on in the narrative beneath it or how the two intersect. So mm-hmm. that if you have both, I think you get the perfect glass yeah. for the yeah. perfect drink. But if not, you still enjoy
yeah, it. You know, and with me, I was like, oh, okay. I'm going to need to go get a insulated thermos right when I'm reading this right now.
And to slip into the publishing conversation a little bit, you know, one of my very favorite reads in the last several years is Tori Peters' Detransition Baby, which is a novel about the trans experience, a very complicated aspect of trans experience. But when Tori Peters had that book published, she was very insistent to her publishers that it not be pitched and marketed as a quote-unquote trans book or even a queer book, but as an upmarket women's fiction book. At every point, she was very insistent that, nope, you market this how you would market any book for the broadest, you know, female audience you would normally publish for in terms of like contemporary fiction. And I think that was an incredibly effective way to get a book that was very much written for a specific in-community audience. So much of that book was for me and other folks like me who live in New York and are trans and are queer and all of that. And that was like very powerful, but was read and was so accessible to such a broad audience that I think it really reached, hundreds of thousands of people, you know?
And I think the same thing is very clearly true with Ring Shout when you look at the fact that in the year that it came out, it was nominated for all the big awards. It won the British Fantasy. It won the Locus Award. It won the Nebula Award. So this is, you know, this is a book that was written for a specific audience, mm-hmm. but clearly resonates because yeah. of its use of all different sorts of narrative devices with a much larger audience. So yeah.
I think they did a great job of packaging it to make it clear what the book is, but then it didn't feel trapped in a particular subcategory only for a certain readership, which,
you know, when we talk about narrative versus contextual as a source of tension, there's a part of me that can't help but think that the greatest experience of that tension is on the part of the publisher who's like, boy, I hope we split the difference between the narrative and the contextual correctly in how we position this mm-hmm. book, because what shelf does it go on? Does it go in sci-fi, fantasy? Does it go in horror? Mm-hmm. Does it, you know, where does it go? Maybe that's a little too meta, but
no, it's,
I can't not think that. Yeah.
And I will say that I think for listeners who are like, I'm not planning to write in a fraught historical era, you know, there are still things to take away from it, even because there's always context. Yes. You know, yes. readers always bring context, even if it is the smallest, even if it is, I am reading a romance and I expect the characters to end up together, even though it hasn't happened on the page yet, this is the type of experience that I'm bringing to the table. If it's the pattern recognition that you were, Dongwon, that you were talking about in a previous episode where it's like, okay, things are happening and I know this tends to end this creepy way. And so that's what I think is going to happen next. And so thinking a lot about what is your audience bringing to the table at that moment, both in terms of their life experiences and their, you know, belief about narrative, what are they used to? What are the patterns that you think that they've walked through? So you can figure out, how do I want to either stay with that and reinforce it? How do I want to subvert it? When do I want to use it, you know, for good or ill? Mm-hmm. But if you're not thinking about it at all, then you can't be intentional about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that we often forget because we bring our own context as writers and we sometimes forget that readers will come from a completely different place.
And, you know, I think this taps into Mary Robinette's metaphor in a certain way of, you don't know what cup your audience is bringing to this particular fountain, right? It you can't control your reader. You have to make space for them in certain ways, but also be really true and honest to the story you're trying to tell and what you're trying to accomplish with it. One thing that's very interesting about this book is it is in part about art in the audience and its and reception of that art and the impact that art can have on how people think and behave in the world, right? Because, you know, Birth of a Nation is such an important piece of how this story is told. And it's about how you can use art as propaganda to manipulate people in really extreme ways. And so I think it's really interesting that as we are talking about the contextual history of this story and the way that creates tension, it is itself engaging. You know, I said earlier, it doesn't really engage with, like, you know, the contextual tension. It does in this one specific way, which is, what was the role of that film in American history? What were the consequences of it? And, you know, it go ahead.
Well, and to that point, because that's so important, not only is that a contextual thing, that's something that is brought into the narrative of the tension, that in order to make sure that the audience has the right context to understand this, we get a lot of information about Birth of the Nation and how it's being used, and you know, and both for the magical purposes of the book, but also the historical context of it. There's a, and that's I think an important thing for you to understand also, that if you are, if you want the book that you're writing to survive outside of a context, even just to survive down history, to then you have to. You have to make sure that it's on the page.
Mm-hmm. A great example of this is, and I don't know exactly where it is in the text, but I think there's a reference where it says 1919 was a bad year for all of us. And for me, I know that that was, you know, in the Red Summer era of Klan riots and horrible numbers of lynchings in the South. But the fact that they all agreed, and then I think everybody had like a slight bit of memory about why it was bad or what had happened, brought it on the page in a way that I brought a lot more context to it, probably as somebody who knows a lot about that era, but there was enough there that you understood that they all had this common experience and a little bit about what it was. It was on the page, but also I was able to bring what was off the page onto it.
Mm-hmm. And I will also say that if you're writing secondary world fantasy, this is a tool that you can use, because your characters will have context that the readers will never have because they're living in a fantasy world. So this kind of tool is something that you can use to give context to something without having to have like, and now I shall tell you about the Battle of the Five Red Armies. We're going to pause this tavern brawl so that we all, it's like, you don't have to do that. You can just have these moments where the characters are all living memories and bringing it onto the page that way.
Well, I think that's also why there are so many prologues in secondary world fantasy and epic fantasy in particular, is they're trying to give you context so that you can have some of that contextual tension as you roll into the thing itself. But also, again, think about genre expectations. We've read Lord of the Rings, so somebody's going on a journey, you know, we're going to have some context and some expectations around what that means.
I also think, and then we will give you homework and wrap up for the week, but I think it's also important that characters carry their context with them.
Yes.
And I think that in when you do historical, it's easier to see how that has happened because we understand how it happened in history. But one thing that I do not like is when you'll have a prologue that will give you all the context, but it doesn't feel like it actually, like it's being carried.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If there was the War of the Five Red Armies and like everyone involved was part of it, how does that war shape them? Mm-hmm. How does it change the way they see things? When do they recognize somebody from one of the other armies and it changes the way that they deal with that character? And so thinking of the context that your own characters are bringing with them is a great way to add more tension to the page. And with that, I have homework, which is to take a scene that you're working on, one that has tension or could use more of it, and put a piece of information at the start that is only meant for the reader. Some piece of context could be historical, could be that you know that this is going to end in the death of a character, anything that is extra context. And then think about revising the scene, believing that the reader has that information. How does it change the way that you actually write the scene and deliver the tension within that context?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.